Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Katie Weaver, Christopher Jones-Cruz, and Bruce Alpert. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
How will presidential candidate Hillary Clinton govern if she is elected president? Will she act as she did when she served New York as a member of the United States Senate from 2001 to 2009? Will she act as she did when she was U.S. Secretary of State during President Barack Obama's first term in office? Or will she behave as she did during the presidency of her husband, Bill Clinton? John Hudak works as a researcher for the Brookings Institution, a public policy group based in Washington, D.C. If, as president, Clinton is more like she was as first lady, it's going to be problematic for her, he says. If she's more like she was as senator, she'll find much more success. Clinton chose to be a more active first lady than the wives of many other presidents. She led her husband's efforts to reform health care, helping to write a health care bill. Congress rejected it in 1993. Opponents criticized the measure's complexity and her involvement as the president's wife in helping to write it. Her public approval ratings dropped by almost 20 points. Her approval ratings rose in 1998 when she strongly defended her husband against accusations of wrongdoing. His critics attempted to remove him from office for having a relationship with a young volunteer at the White House. Reporter Michael Isikoff first uncovered the story of the relationship. There's always been that side of Hillary Clinton who has looked with suspicion towards the news media and has been quite combative, and that sometimes contrasts with the public image that Clinton likes to present, he said. Isikoff said Clinton is still careful when she talks with reporters. While she gives TV interviews, Isikoff said, she doesn't give press conferences where reporters can ask anything they want or are likely to badger her with questions she doesn't want to spend a lot of time answering. This unwillingness to speak with reporters and her weakness as a politician, a weakness she has admitted, can make Clinton look like a poor candidate. But Indira Lakshmanan says it is important to remember that campaigning for office is not the same as governing. Lakshmanan has written for Politico, a newspaper specializing in national politics. She reported on Clinton's campaign for the presidency in 2008, and her time as Secretary of State. She's much better when she's actually in office, and you see it even in just her body language and her behavior. She was much more relaxed around her own staff, around the press, just more relaxed and comfortable when she actually was in office, Lakshmanan said. Lakshmanan believes Clinton will continue the work and build on the programs of President Barack Obama if she is elected. We know that she has more hawkish tendencies. She is more of a traditional Cold War realist Democrat. But I think she would double down on health care, and she would perhaps try to do more interventionist, for humanitarian reasons, foreign policy than the Obama administration has been willing to do. Clinton would likely deal with U.S. lawmakers differently than Obama did. He has not had strong relations with congressional leaders during his presidency. The Brookings Institution's John Hudak says Clinton's experience as a senator would be helpful, especially in the first few months of her presidency. If it's controlled by Republicans, she's going to have to veto an Obamacare repeal. She's going to have to deal with all of the things President Obama has had to deal with coming from Congress, he says. Hudak adds, Clinton could tell Congress she would agree to not make major changes in tax laws or try to extend President Obama's health care reforms. Then, he says, she could say, I want to get things done, and I want you to help me. Lakshmanan says Clinton should try to govern as she did when she was a U.S. senator. At that time, she worked quietly on policy and legislation that the two main political parties would support. Experts say if her presidency is to be effective, she should learn from mistakes she made in her first presidential campaign and during her time as Secretary of State. Ron Fournier reports on politics for National Journal. He says Clinton was not successful as head of the State Department. We saw in 2008 and at the State Department an inability to run a big operation in a 21st-century way, he said. Fournier says Clinton's actions during and after the deadly raid on a U.S. government building in Benghazi raises questions about her leadership style and believability. Fournier has reported on Clinton since the 1980s, when her husband Bill Clinton was the governor of Arkansas. He says she is a nice person. He likes the way she looks at solving problems. She thinks like a lawyer. Here's what we got to get done. Boom, boom, get it done. Think it through, work it through, he said. I'm Mario Ritter.
Donald Trump has proved an unusual political candidate since he entered the 2016 United States presidential campaign. The Republican Party nominee is the first billionaire businessman and reality television star to seek the presidency. He has never held public office before. But much of his support is rooted in his political outsider image. Born in Queens, New York, he grew up in a wealthy family headed by his real estate developer father, Fred Trump. Bart Rossi is a political psychologist. He says Trump's father was a strong influence.
His father was very authoritarian, very demanding, the boss. And of course, Donald picked up these traits and these characteristics.
Trump studied business at the famed Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He took over his father's company in 1971. His early career featured great successes, like the development of the iconic Trump Tower in New York City in 1983. He demonstrated skill at personal branding and a deep understanding in the use of media. Edward Mermelstein is a leading real estate attorney in New York.
Doing business in New York requires a very strong person, very motivated person, and he is very much a New York businessman.
Trump also experienced failures. Some of his casinos failed. A real estate crash hit his personal fortune very hard. George Washington University's Christopher Leinberger is an expert on real estate and city planning.
New York is it's the biggest market as far as real estate development in this country. And he was a mid-sized player, and most people who looked on from the outside feel that he's a mediocre success.
Donald Trump's personal life has also had very public ups and downs. He has been married 3 times. His 2 divorces were covered extensively by the media. He has 5 children, 4 of them adults who have been very active in his campaign. He has a young son with his current wife, Melania. On the campaign trail, his personal life has received as much attention as his business dealings. In a 2005 videotape recently leaked to the press, Trump spoke about touching women sexually without their permission. After the recording was released, several women reported that Trump had done exactly that to them. Trump denied the accusations.
These vicious claims about me of inappropriate conduct with women are totally and absolutely false.
Donald Trump has a history of coming back from adversity. In the 2000s, he brought his aggressive business style and sharp speech to a national television audience. He starred in the popular reality show The Apprentice. On the show, people competed to win a position in a Trump company. Trump became a major political voice in 2011 when he questioned President Barack Obama's birthplace. He demanded Obama make public his birth certificate. President Obama was born in the American island state of Hawaii. His birth certificate was released publicly. Still, Trump questioned the president's birthplace. He did not publicly accept that Obama was U.S. born until last month. Donald Trump defeated 16 Republican opponents for the party's presidential nomination. Michael Cranish is the author of the book Trump Revealed.
He's tapped into this great angst that's been out there for quite some time.
Donald Trump's self-description as a populist politician has resonated with American voters.
I am with you. I will fight for you. And I will win for you.
I'm Katie Weaver.
Pennsylvania television stations
are broadcasting so many political advertisements that not even a small child can miss them. So, it was no surprise last week when 2.5-year-old Benson Weiland repeated these words to customers and employees at a Chili's restaurant. "I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message." Everyone laughed. Those are the words Trump and almost all candidates say at the end of their political messages. Trump is the Republican candidate for president. Hillary Clinton is the Democratic candidate. Both candidates are campaigning hard in Pennsylvania. Winning the state and its 20 Electoral College votes might decide who wins the presidential election and replaces Barack Obama. Election Day is Tuesday.
Both the Clinton and Trump campaigns are spending a lot of time seeking votes in Pennsylvania's Dauphin County. It is located in the central part of the state. Over the weekend, both Trump and Vice President Joe Biden gave speeches in the county. 6% more Dauphin County voters supported Democrats Barack Obama and Joe Biden over Republicans Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan in the 2012 presidential election. Jeff Haist is a Republican who serves on the Dauphin County Board of Commissioners, the local governing board. He first supported Marco Rubio and later Ted Cruz for the Republican presidential nomination, but both dropped out of the race after Trump won more votes in the Republican primary elections. Haist said he now solidly supports Trump. He forgives Trump for the comments he made about both Rubio and Cruz. For example, Trump said without evidence that Cruz's father played a role in the assassination of President John Kennedy in 1963. "I'm an elected official, and I know things are said in a political campaign that are taken back once people get elected," Haist said. Haist said he believes Trump will make the changes needed in the American government to help middle-class workers find better jobs.
That does not mean he is happy with some of Trump's statements about women and immigrants. Haist's wife is of Latin American ancestry. He said they had a long talk after the October 7th release of a recording of Trump from 11 years ago. In the recording, Trump can be heard saying he can touch and kiss women without their permission because he is well known. Haist said he knows most people consider Clinton to have a big advantage in terms of get-out-the-vote efforts. But he said Trump supporters also are well organized. The Trump campaign is using social media networks effectively to reach voters, he said.
American voters are electing more than a new president and vice president on Tuesday. Voters will also be filling all 435 seats in the United States House of Representatives. In addition, they are deciding 34 U.S. Senate races. 12 state governorships, and hundreds of local issues. The issues include legalization of the drug marijuana, gun control, health care, and even the minimum wage. The website Ballotpedia.com reports there are a total of 154 statewide measures on ballots in 35 states, affecting over 200 million people. The site reports that 82 million people live in states where voters could legalize marijuana. Reports say more than 21 million live in states where voters could increase the minimum wage, the lowest wages permitted under the law. Ballot measures to increase restrictions on gun ownership could affect more than 50 million people. Taxes on tobacco products could increase for more than 51 million people. In California, voters will decide if the state government should ban plastic bags, those used in many stores. They also are being asked whether the state should require men in pornographic films to wear condoms. Voters in Maine will decide if they want their state to create a system of voting that requires one or more votes until the winner receives a majority of the ballots. The website Curbed.com says voters in 25 states are being asked to approve spending a total of $200 billion on transportation infrastructure, such as road improvements. Politico.com reports medical marijuana could soon be legal in a majority of the states. And the number of states that ban executions could reach 21, the highest in American history. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is What's Trending Today. Janet Reno, the first woman to serve as U.S. Attorney General, died Monday. She had Parkinson's disease, which affects a person's ability to control his or her muscles. She was 78 years old. The Attorney General is the head of the United States Department of Justice. Many people remembered her on social media sites Monday, making her name one of the top trending topics. Reno was the Attorney General under President Bill Clinton for 8 years, beginning in 1993. Reno ordered a raid of a religious group's property in Waco, Texas, during a standoff with government officers. The raid resulted in the deaths of nearly 80 members of the group. She was involved in the capture and prosecution of Ted Kaczynski, a man who sent bombs through the mail. Towards the end of her time as Attorney General, the Department of Justice was involved in a case involving a boy from Cuba. The boy, Elian Gonzalez, was born in Cuba. He lived with his mother in Florida. When the boy's mother died, he continued living in Florida with his mother's family. Reno said he should go back to Cuba to live with his father. Federal agents took the boy away and sent him back to Cuba. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report.
children grow quickly, especially their feet. But many families cannot buy new shoes each time a child needs them. As a result, about 300 million children around the world go barefoot. Those children risk picking up diseases and parasites from the soil. An American man may have a solution for those barefoot kids, a shoe that grows with the child. VOA correspondent June So traveled to Idaho to interview Kenton Lee. We bring that story to our Learning English audience. Kenton Lee is the creator of The Shoe That Grows. He explains how the shoe works and how it is able to last so long.
So it grows in three places. The front, it can also grow on the side with the Velcro, and then on the back with our buckle, and can last up to 5 years. The bottom is a compressed rubber, like a tire rubber. Top is just a high-quality leather.
The shoe comes in two sizes. Small, that fits children aged 4 to 9, and large, for children aged 9 to 14. Lee says he got the idea for the shoe while working as a volunteer in an orphanage in Kenya.
And there was a little girl in a white dress walking next to me, and I just remember looking down and seeing how small her shoes were. They were just way too small for her feet. They were so small she had to cut open the front of her shoes to let her toes stick out. And I just remember thinking, wouldn't it be nice if there were a pair of shoes that could grow with her feet?
However, Lee says it was not easy to turn his idea into a reality.
I kept writing down, well, I should do this because of this or because of that. All these reasons why it really was important for me to try to make the shoe that could grow and to try to help.
Finally, in 2009, Lee founded a nonprofit organization called Because International. In the office of Because International, Lee keeps a pair of his own shoes to help him remember his promise.
I told myself I would not get new shoes until the idea was done. So those are the shoes that I wore for a little over 5 years. But once we finally made the shoe that grows happen, then I finally got some new shoes.
Because International works with several partner organizations. Together, they have sent more than 50,000 pairs of shoes to 70 countries.
The majority of our shoes are going to East Africa, so Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, and then also a lot of our shoes go to Haiti and Nicaragua, some of the Central American countries as well.
Lee says many of these areas do not have good sanitation. As a result, illness spreads easily. Children pick up diseases and parasites through the soles of their bare feet and fall sick.
It's really heartbreaking. They stay sick for a long time. They're not able to afford the medical care. And so a lot of them just really fall behind. They don't go to school and they don't learn and grow as a child should.
A pair of shoes, he says, gives more than protection. It gives a child self-worth and more chances to succeed.
Because it's a small thing that really does make a big difference to keep them healthy and happy and having more chances to succeed.
Kenton Lee adds that his goal is to help get the shoe that grows to as many children as he can around the world. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.